Okay, the title that was given to me is Halachic Aspects of Shabbos, Shabbat, and New Technology. The new technology is not so much the issue we need to focus on, but really the older technology, which I guess wouldn't be called technology anymore. We're really going to focus on the issue of electricity and Shabbos. To the extent that time allows, we'll talk about some of the newer things. There are some new things that need to be discussed, but we need to discuss the basics first. Okay. So, just a very, very simplistic background on what electricity is all about. If you're in the physics / engineering track, you probably don't need to listen to this. You probably know a lot more than I do. But this is like fourth grade level electricity, okay? An atom consists of protons, neutrons, and electrons. The electrons are negatively charged, protons positive, neutrons are neutral. The electrons can be easily detached from one atom to go to another atom. And the point is that these negatively charged electrons always seek neutrality. They always want to be connected with atoms of the same, where there's the same number of protons and electrons. So, if anyone has any comments, I don't think it really matters the exact details. So basically, the way electricity is harnessed is by forcing the electrons to move through, let's say, a wire. Now, I have a battery in this one here. So you have a battery, right? There's a plus on top. What's that? That's the positive end. And the minus, which doesn't appear on this battery, is the negative end. Okay, so if I put a wire and connect it the top to the bottom, what's going to happen? The electrons will start running around, and the battery will be dead within a matter of half hour, an hour, whatever. That's called short-circuiting a battery. But if I attach a device in the middle, so the electrons will run through the device and create what's called resistance to the device, and that will power the device. Okay, and then the electrons will go through the device and back to the top of the battery, the choza chalila, and keep going around. The machlokas, how to describe it, whether it goes from the plus to the minus, minus to the plus, it's not really important. That's battery powered, what's called direct current. Alternating current has basically two ends. It's sending the electrons one way and then back the other way. It's more efficient, that's why it's used in households. Halachically, there are Shlomo Zalman in many places tries to make all these different chilukim between AC and DC. We're not going to get into any of them today. There are three terms that are important here. There's voltage, current, and resistance. Again, people who write about electricity distinguish between the three terms. Just to compare it to water for a second, let's say you have a pipe with water in it. So the current is, Lamasha, like the pressure, the current is how much water is flowing through the pipe. The voltage is the size of the pipe. So the bigger the pipe, the more easily the water can go through. The smaller the pipe, the less water can go. That's the resistance. How big the pipe is, and the voltage is compared to the pressure. Okay. Now, when we talk about electric appliances, for our purposes, we'll categorize them in three different categories. Let's say the first category includes all electric devices. The second category will include devices where the load, the thing that you're attaching, the battery or the whatever it is you're attaching to the current, actually produces a malacha in it unto itself. For example, and let's say a light bulb. So a light bulb produces havara. So in dealing with this second category, you not only have to deal with the specific issur of what the general issur is to turn on an electric device, But there's an additional component where there's a malacha that's being produced in addition to the whatever iser, the iser of electricity, which we'll get to in a moment. And the third category is not that important, but just to give a perspective on things, and that's what we would like to call klisha malacha l'iser, an electric device that, in the end of the day, whatever you use it for, it's normally used to do a malacha. So let's say a lawnmower. You can use it to cut grass, so that's a malacha d'oraisa. And if you go through the list of household appliances, you'll see that most of them are appliances of that sort. That, you know, we don't have to have all these discussions. You know, you don't have to teach somebody that shaving is usher on Shabbos because you can't turn on the shaver. But, you know, if people were using electric devices, then you have to really get down to knowing every single appliance and what malacha does. That category is really there for perspective more than anything else. Now, the electricity obviously is somewhat new if you look in the halachic literature. The early discussions, and it's important historically that the first household electric appliance or device was a light bulb as opposed to something else. So all the discussions center around Havara, about kindling a fire, which kindling a fire is very fine when you talk about a light bulb, but other devices don't necessarily have a fire in them. You know, most that don't produce any heat, they're not going to produce a fire. So Rav Chaim Ozer, this is in the source sheet, the first source talks about the problem, the second source, sorry, in Tshuvas Achiezer talks about whether there's grumma, whether it's considered indirect to complete a circuit. Basically, aside from the three things I described before, the battery, the wire, and the device that's attached, you can have a switch. And the switch basically, when it's open, so let's say a battery, this is the battery. This is the load, whatever it is, a motor, a light, right? And then you have a switch. So that's when the switch is in the open position, there's no connection between here and here, so the electricity can't flow. That's what a switch does. It basically just opens up the circuit. When it's closed, then the device functions. Okay? So the early discussion was maybe flipping the switch is basically you're just connecting the two things and electricity flows with mela. So maybe that should be grumma. That was the early discussion. Rav Chaim Ozer said, no, it's not grumma. Okay, and being that he was talking about light bulbs, he said you're over an Isser Daraisa of Havara, of kindling on Shabbos. The Beis Yitzchak was the first to deal with other devices not relating to lights. I believe he's talking about a record player, a gramophone, a telephone, and the telephone. You also have to be careful when you read these things. You know, our telephone is not the same as the old telephone, which is interesting as we see the development of the technology through the halachic literature. But the telephone he discusses. And there you can't say Havara, although some did want to rule that it would be a violation of Havara. Any type of completing a circuit is Havara, which is factually inaccurate, because there's no real fire in the wires. The Chazon Ish discusses that maybe it should be Bishul. They're the same way there's Bishul on foods, there's Bishul on non-food items. So the shear of Bishul for metal is glowing hot, which the wires do not get that hot. They'll melt if they get glowing hot. Light bulbs are designed to get glowing hot. But regular electricity will not get glowing hot. So the Chazon Ish comes up with this idea that there's a chatzi shear of bishul if it gets even to a little bit of heat. Like even, you know, if you look at a laptop, laptops get pretty hot, but they're not glowing hot, otherwise the whole thing would melt. So Chazon Ish said there's a chatzi shear of bishul, which is related to his shita that you can't put, let's say, a blech on the fire on Shabbos, because that's a chassi shir bishul. And other Afronim deal with this. They don't think that much of a... They're not concerned so much about the bishul aspect. So let's say like a telephone. So the Beis Yitzchak comes up with this idea. Yeah.
Why would there be a difference of chassi shir could apply to other malachos? Why is bishul something that it's less likely to apply to?
Well, there's no chassi shir of bishul. Let's say if you cook something to less than machal ben drosoi, there's a cutoff point somewhere. The chassidim suggested what?
Couldn't you just say the chassi shir of bishul only makes sense if there's an esh? You put it on the esh for five.
No,
six,
bishul doesn't. No, bishul is bishul. If you cook something, you cook something.
So in that case,
there are five reasons why you can argue with the chazanish. Shlomo Zalman says it would be like bishul b'chama because there's no eish. There are other reasons. Rav Moshe says that it's only if it's roy to actually get to the shear where it will totally burn. But the chazanish, that's a chiddush to say that Yatz lotus bo is a chassi shir of bishul matetes. He himself admits that it would be a psik reisha lel nichale, which hopefully we'll get the psik reisha. So it wouldn't be as much of a problem as, let's say, the Havar. We'll get the chazanish's opinion in a minute. So the Beis Yitzchak says that the reason why one is not allowed to complete a circuit, let's say for a telephone or a motor, or, you know, this could be anything here. It could be a motor, it could be a light that doesn't have any heat. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Chazanish, so the Beis Yitzchak says that it's based on the Gemara in Beitza that talks about molid recha. Gemara says that you can't infuse scent into a garment based on this idea of molid recha, and it's usur even on yantiv. And the Beis Yitzchak takes a very expansive approach to this concept of molid recha, that it doesn't only apply to infusing scents, but if you infuse current into a device, so that's also considered some form of this issur of molid recha.
That's
derabbanan.
There's an issue of infusing or creating, putting something into something else.
Right, to give something like a new characteristic or a new life, you know, different. There are kulas attached to molim, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, which if you assume that the only issue of electricity is molim, so then there will be, that will have certain ramifications. So, in 1935, when Shlomo Zalman Orbach was 25 years old, his mother needed a hearing aid. And I don't have time to read the whole thing inside. It's a fascinating... All his stuff on electricity is very fascinating. So I only have in the source sheet... this is Chelek Beis of the Black Mincha Shlomo. There's two sets of the posthumous version of the Mincha Shlomo. This is I think it's from the black one as opposed to the red one. Simon Chapei, where he actually, until now we didn't have the letter that he actually wrote to the Chazanish. So the only thing they added was they printed the letter that he wrote to the Chazanish. So he tells you the story that his mother needed a hearing aid, and the hearing aids that they had back then were not as technologically advanced as our hearing aids, so basically, if somebody wants to wear a hearing aid, they have to turn it on only when they're going to use it and turn it off right after. Otherwise, there's a lot of feedback in the hearing aid. It's going to be very distressful to walk around with a hearing aid like that. Plus, the battery will die. So Shlomo Zalman says he works out with, and he doesn't tell you which posik, but some posik in Yerushalayim, who between 1935 and 1948 was nifted. So if you want to, I've been trying to figure out who it is. I have my suspicions, but I don't know definitively. If you want to try to research this, I'd be glad to hear. I spoke to Rabbi Chalap, because Rabbi Chalap, knew all the people in Yerushalayim in that time. But he didn't really know. But, so...
When was this letter written in the Chazanish?
This was written in 48. So in Tavshin Ches. It was, this letter was written to the Chazon Ish.
He'd been working on it for 13 years.
No. So what happened was, he was matir the hearing aid for his mother to use the hearing aid and to turn it on and off, as long as you don't change the battery on Shabbos. Because changing the battery might be a form of tikkun mana, that you're fixing it because it's broken. Once the battery's dead, you can put a new battery in. So as long as you don't have to change the battery, you can wear it, you can use it on Shabbos and Yontif. So then the Sefer Chazon Ish comes out, and he's reading it. And in two places in the Sefer, the Chazon Ish points out that if somebody completes a circuit on Shabbos, they're in violation of the Isser of Bona, of building.
How would that differ from closing a door?
Okay, we'll get to that. So Shlomo Zalman writes nitzarly that this psak caused me a lot of tsar, because I worked it out with a rav, and now you tell me that I was over in Isser Daraisa. I told my mother to be over in Isser Daraisa. So he wrote to the Chazon Ish basically with the argument that, look, first of all, I'm not sure if all the arguments are necessarily in this letter, but if you look in all his writings, you get the basic three arguments. One, this is basically, the electrons are basically working like water. You're overflowing electrons, you're pushing them through, and they're going to cause the device, you know, the hearing aid or whatever it is, to go on. So what's the problem? If you did that with water, if you overflowed water to make, something go around, and there was no malach at the end of the system. If you opened the water and it was grinding wheat at the end, that would be a different story. But just to have, let's say, you pour water on one of these things that spin around, so nobody will tell you that that's like turning on a fan. So what's the difference between water and electrons? The second thing he said was that he quoted the Shita of the Chayei Adam, which the Mishnah Berurah quotes. The Prima Gadim also holds this way, just a minute, that winding up a watch on Shabbos is considered tikkun mana. When we talk about, I'm going to use the terms bona and tikkun mana interchangeably, only because, you know, everyone else does. And there's no other way to present it. So the Chayei Adam and the Prima Gadim say that if you wind up a watch, so you are Chayev, Mishum Tikkun Mana. Now the watches of old, you actually had to wind them up, and then they wound down, and that's how they went around. They weren't electric. So Shlomo Zalman says, yeah, I understand that those cases are considered Tikkun Mana Min HaTorah. But the reason why those are considered tikkun mana min haTorah is because at the end of the day, the watch has a certain flaw in its functionality. Halavai, you should be able to wind the watch up, and it should be able to run forever. The fact that when you wind it up, it runs out of winds, you know, after X amount of days, so that's a flaw. And now when the watch finishes, when it's no longer running, so now it's considered broken, right? Like the clock in the base measures. So it doesn't work. It's not telling time. But here, the hearing aid, it's not broken when you turn it off. You're not going to say that it's broken. Adarava. The reason why you turn it off, that's part of the great thing about the hearing aid, is that you can actually turn it off. If you had to leave it on the whole time, nobody would ever buy it, and it would kill the battery. So that's a good thing, that the hearing aid or any electric device, that you can actually turn it off. So things which... that's his distinction. Things which there's a flaw in its creation, that you have to do something every once in a while to get it going again. So, and that's basically why he said you can't change the battery in the hearing aid, because that's already a flaw. But things which are good for the system, so that's not considered a flaw. That's not tikkun mana. Yeah.
So you can't change the battery, because if you change the battery, then you're circumventing the problem.
No, basically, when the battery is dead,
it's like the watch.
Right, it's like the watch that wound down. It's broken now, so now you have to fix it. Where as opposed to turning on and off the hearing aid, you're not going to say that when you turn it off, I just broke the hearing aid. I'm using it in a different way. Yeah.
The first opposition, the first problem which comes out of that more flowing, wouldn't this be like, you had a pipe and part of the pipe was open, and closing the pipe allowed the water to flow straight through? So isn't that a better parallel? So wouldn't that be going out, or that would also not be going out?
In terms of, we have to address the third thing, the door, right? What's your name?
Mitch.
So Mitch asked, well, what's the difference between this and a door? Basically, the switch is just like a door opening and closing. So why is a door Muslim? So that's the normal way for it to work. It opens and closes. So if you had a pipe that was meant to be opened and closed, that's basically what your sink is. When you turn it on, you open it up, and when you close it, you basically cut off the water, and then it stops. So
is that the first problem also?
I mean, it's all part of one global objection to the Chazon Ish's opinion. You have to really put all three arguments together. It is one,
Is turning on and off the hearing aid equivalent to closing and opening a circuit, or is it equivalent to like the circuit stopping altogether in the electric current?
Say that again?
Is turning off a hearing aid equivalent to closing to opening the circuit so the current stops, or is it that the electric current stops altogether?
They're essentially the same thing, but I don't know exactly what type of hearing aid, but from the whole discussion, it sounds like if you open the circuit, that's what you did when you turned it off. You just opened the circuit.
So electrons are basically just at a standstill?
Yeah, they stop. They don't go anywhere unless there's something driving them, drawing them out of the battery and around to the front of the battery. Okay. So Chazon Ish, so he writes this letter to Chazon Ish. There were a few letters back and forth.
Difference drawn between water and electrons, and as you can see water.
Nobody mentions that explicitly, but that seems to be the underlying issue between the two of them. If you'll see what the Chazon Ish responds, and you'll see that seems to be the underlying issue. The Chazon Ish responds, he's not really so bothered by the switch itself. The switch, I'll be molded to you, is like the door. The problem is the fact that there's electricity that's coming in conjunction with the switch. He actually quotes a Gemara about a pole, screwing two parts of a pole together, that each one can't function without the other. So here's the same thing. The electrons can't function, from his perspective, the electrons can't function without the switch can't function without the electrons, and now you're gluing everything together, you're putting everything together and bringing it to life.
That sounds like it's Israel bringing things to, creating a function or bringing things to life, it's Israel running.
Right.
Because really both the electrons and the switch are irrelevant.
Right, right.
What's relevant is they bring the circuit to life.
Right.
And you're doing that by...
by harnessing the electricity.
Right.
These three arguments are all sort of in conjunction. The second argument, he says that the door heter only applies to something that's usable in both states. The door is good when it's open, the door is good when it's closed, whereas here, this thing is only functional when it's on, and as opposed to when it's off, it's not functional. Again, that's a judgment call. Rav Shlomo Zalman obviously disagreed with that.
The tab is stronger.
Right.
Because the hearing aid, you could say nami. Hearing aid is different from the door. Hearing aid does nothing when it's off. You can't say the function of not working. That's not a function. But it is like the tap. It doesn't let out water when it's not off.
Right.
The not lecture from the tap, it's back from the door.
I don't remember. He had a bunch of, there were a lot of letters. I don't remember. Because there was a piece in the middle of all the letters where he just gave you his own thoughts. So I don't remember if that was in that part or in one of the letters. He had other proofs. I mean, his style in general, Shlomo Zalman's style, is to take something which everyone assumes is obvious, but we don't necessarily know that that's true, and he'll say, okay, so we have a proof from this obvious situation that's X, Y, and Z. So he brought a proof from the fact that everyone uses gas lamps on Yontif, and he thought that gas lamps would be considered bona according to the Chazon Ish. And then or a candle. The candle, he tells you why it might not be. Why isn't a candle bona? You're basically harnessing all the kofos together of the candle and the wick. So you shouldn't be allowed to light a candle on Yom Tov. It should be called bona, according to the Chazon Ish.
Is that necessarily the wrong way to argue in these cases where you don't have gemaras?
Is that the wrong way? I don't think he felt it was the wrong way. This is his style in general. I mean, this is why, but it comes out much more convincing when you do it like this. He has other proofs also, but these proofs seem to be the most compelling for some reason. Yeah.
According to Chazon Ish, the problem is every time you open the switch and you have this problem with the switch plus the electron flowing. And how is that any different than opening a faucet? Once you open the faucet, the wires are flowing from the ground above the switch.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Chazon Ish didn't address it. But I think the last point might make all the distinctions here. He has something, it might not work with the sink. He says anything that, he uses the term chachma, that anything that's designed by people in a manner of chachma, and you put it all together through that, that's considered bona. Whatever that means, but he says that's what was going on in the Mishkan, and that's what bona is all about. Okay, fine, take it or leave it, that's what the Chazon Ish held. Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't agree, obviously, but after a few letters he stopped writing to him. He said, you know, I'm not, this is my last letter, I'm not gonna, you know, sit, I'll give in. But that's the history. Okay? Now, so basically we have two approaches. It could either be bona, which is deraisa, or molid, which is derabanan. So let's talk about first the differences whether something is deraisa or derabanan. So one is chola.
Rav Shlomo Zalman never takes a stand whether he goes.
He doesn't take a stand on. We'll talk about what he held. And I'm just going to get to that. The microphone tshuva was pre Chazon Ish. Sure. Yeah. And the microphone tshuva and the refrigerator tshuva also. So the nafka mina whether it's the raisa drabanan. So one is chola, and that will apply to a chola sheyesh bo sakana in a situation where we have the luxury of trying to minimize the yisur. So we would go for a drabanan over the raisa. If it's molid, if you reject the Chazon Ish, you assume the only yisur is because of molid, then it would be drabanan. Yeah, we'll get to what he said, but I'm just saying we have two.
We have molid
and bona, and then Rav Shlomo Zalman who argued that maybe it should be nothing.
Right, molid, bona.
But there's no if it's nothing, there's no nothing talk about nafka bina. So that's chola sheyesh bo sakana. Chola she'ein bo sakana is not as clear because not all drabonans are drabonans that you can violate. For a chol shem b'sakana, it's a whole different discussion. I think that's part of the curriculum. But at least I de shinoi for a chol shem b'sakana, the rabbanon is permitted. The second nafka mina will be amir la'akum. There's a concept of shvus to shvus, b'makom tzar, b'makom tzorach, b'makom mitzvah. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a malacha drabbanon. Or any drabanan, if it's a pressing situation. And the third nafka mina will be in the psik resha. The psik resha, which we'll hopefully get to, has differences between whether the result is deraisa or drabanan. Okay? The differences between bona and molid are also somewhat. They will have their own differences also. For example, turning the device off. So you can't infuse scent into a garment, but we don't know of any iser of taking a nice smelling garment and taking it outside to air out so that it loses the smell. There's no anti-molid. Whereas there is an opposite of bona, which is tosa. So the reason, when the Chazon Ish says bona, so he's stressing the fact that if he turns something off, it will be sotir. If he turns something on, it will be bona. Yeah.
So that's confused. When we're looking for nothing in between the Drabanan and the Raisa, the Drabanan is what?
Molid would be Drabanan.
Okay, so
or what these nafkaminas will apply, we'll see in a second that there'll be a compromise that maybe you'll say bona or misakin mona means rabona. So then again you'll have these nafkaminas. Another thing is, let's say, changing the volume on a device, changing the resistance. So you can have somewhere on the circuit a volume switch, which will either increase the resistance or decrease the resistance so that this load will get less current. And in effect, if it's attached to a buzzer, it will be a volume. If it's attached to a fan, it will be the speed of the fan. And you can figure out the other devices. So the Gemara in Basin, when it talks about molar, it says that you're not allowed to infuse new scent into the garment, but you can increase scent that was already there. So if it smells already of lemons, you're allowed to pour more lemon juice on it and make it smell even stronger. So the equation would be to volume, to raise and lower the volume, certainly would lower the volume. You know, that's again like the reverse molar we don't have. Rabbi Halperin, who runs the Machon Mada'ila Technology V'Halacha, says that certainly, according to the Chazon Ish, it would be bona. Every time you turn up the volume or turn it down, it would be soser. The logic of it is not so clear. And he even argues that it would be molid, and he tries to distinguish between the case in the Gemara about the scent in the garment and the volume. That basically, when you turn it up, so you're getting a whole new system, as opposed to the scent stays there and you're just adding more. So, halakha l'maisa,
Does
that mean you don't turn Hashmah's call? Hashmah's call would have to be dealt with on a different.
So that falls into the category.
Right, that falls into a category where, you know, it would be like a category 2, but the issue would only be on a level of Drabana.
So Rav Halperin would probably tell you that even lowering the volume would be molded.
Right. I don't remember exactly what he says, but he's not so into turning up and down the volume. Whereas Rabbi Rosen from Machon Tzomet, he came to speak to the Kollel, I think it was 3 years ago, in 102. He said, it's cautious that everyone agrees you could turn up and down the volume, as long as you don't turn it down to zero. So you have this machlokas, you know, nowadays.
This is all
there's the HVH. People will be making and turning up and down volume. Of course, it doesn't apply. Let's say something like this. If you press volume up, volume down, so you're dealing with a lot more issues than just turning a dial. You know, if it's a digital volume switch, so all bets are off. But a regular or the old style volume switch, where all it does is change the resistance, so that's a machlokas arei yom hazeh among contemporary poskim.
Even for the Chazon Ish, they're not here.
Yeah, Rabbi Rosen wanted to suggest that maybe we don't even follow the Chazon Ish totally, but we'll see in a second that that's not necessarily so. That would be what? Mukta, you have to deal with also. That's if you assume that it's mutter to turn up and down the volumes, then it's not an it's not a klisha malachal isser. It's a klisha malachal heter.
Are you referring only to a hearing aid, or are you referring to anything out of the volume?
Well, it would be anything with volume. So if you allow, no, if you allow turning up and down the volumes, then it wouldn't be mukta, right? Because then it's mutter to do on shot. The whole thing, yeah, but that particular dial is not mukta. Okay, so the way most poskim go is a third approach. I'll present it from Rav Schefter. He has a piece about those labryuvials. If anyone's seen them, you mix water, salt water and magnesium, and it makes a whole chemical explosion, and it cooks your food. So the question, he has a whole article about using that on Shabbos, with all the different things that may come up. So So he questions whether you're allowed to even mix the two chemicals together and make a chemical reaction on Shabbos, based on a Gemara in Ksuvos, where the Gemara says that if you have a stuffed drain pipe that's really stuffed, we're not going to talk about plungers right now, but really stuffed, you can only unstuff it b'shinoi, and the assumption, according to at least some Rishonim, is that's some form of Misaken Manimis Rabbanon. So Rosh Hashanah understands that anytime you get a system to go in motion, that's some form of Misaken Manimis Rabbanon. Whether that's the actual explanation or there's another explanation, that's what you find in a lot of poskim, that they assume that there isn't an isser in using electricity, but it's not like with Hazanish that it's bona, but it's some sort of Misaken Manimis Rabbanon.
And that's a physical, tangible system. Not electricity is not tangible.
No, but
we're dealing with
okay, but I'll say like this: that from Rosh Hashanah's perspective, you don't look at anything behind the scenes. You press a button and the fan goes on, so you just set up a system in motion.
So you're not allowed to make a chemical reaction with Shabbos, according to that thing.
Right.
So I can never mix an acid or a base. And I can never neutralize an acid.
Only if you're
if you're activating a system, when you pour these two chemicals together and it makes an explosion that's going to heat your food, so you just set up a system that's going to heat up your food. Whereas if you drink milk, that's not...
Why is heat the criteria?
Because you do one thing in order to set up a chain reaction of events.
It sounds like the Chazanish is Chochmah. It sounds like one of these kinds of stars.
Right, but on the level of Drabana, what for better, either as a compromise, that's one approach, which is like a third approach, but a new way of dealing with it, or like a middle approach. The Shmir Shabbos Kehilchoso, which was written by Rav Neuber, who's a Talmud of Shlomo Zalman, manages to write a whole sefer totally skirting the issue. Does not address the issue of electricity. He deals with certain devices, but he doesn't talk about the isser. I believe he doesn't deal with it explicitly anywhere. But he leaves us with some hints. So in one place he writes that if it's very hot, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn on the air conditioner. And there's an unassuming footnoting the Minchas Yitzchak. The Minchas Yitzchak says, yeah, because turning on an air conditioner is Rabbanon, and asking a non-Jew is Rabbanon, it's a shvus v'makom tsar, and that's why it's mutter to turn on the air conditioner. So obviously if he's footnoting this Minchas Yitzchak, it's because he holds it to be true. The same thing he talks about using a telephone on Yontiv for a chola she'en bo sakana. So he says that he says you can't use a telephone on Shabbos, so you can use a telephone on Yontiv for a chola she'en bo sakana. So why? What's interesting, Shabbos and Yontiv? Like, bona applies on Shabbos and Yontiv. I know Rabbi Schwartz is going to say, no, what about the Tosfos? The Tosfos talks about making cheese on Daf Sadi Hey and the Gemara on Shabbos. The Tosfos there suggests that maybe bona is only usher mitrabana, but it's nevertheless usher on Yontiv. So bona is usher on Shabbos and Yontiv. Molad's usher on Shabbos and Yontiv. So where does... why is there a difference in the chola she'en bo sakana making a telephone call? So in the footnote it says because the old phones had lights on them, real incandescent lights. So he says hamsas eish on yantiv is only midrabanan, and therefore you're allowed to make a phone call on yantiv. Meaning if it was Shabbos, so you're turning on the light by using the phone, that's midaraisa. But turning on the phone on yantiv, dialing on yantiv, is only midrabanan because of the light. He doesn't deal with the electricity part, but obviously the assumption is that it's Drabanan or less. And that's why you can call the doctor on for a cholish embo sakana. Yeah.
I heard from one around that most modern electrical systems, especially light switches, even fluorescent lights, actually, because of inefficiency, have sparks which go up in
the air. The sparks themselves, people are not so worried about, because a spark is only... It's a bad term, but a chatishi or a fire. It's not a real fire. The same way a light without heat is also not fire. Which we'll talk about. We're running a little bit behind schedule here. I want to get to Grama and Psegresha, but I'm trying to condense a lot of material into short amounts of time. Okay, and then There's one more Nachmina with Chalmoid. We're not going to discuss that. Whatever. There are enough Ramazim that he wasn't so nervous about the Chazan Ishas, the Chazan Isha Shita. And Rav Neventhal, who's also a Talmud of Shlomo Zalman, is quoted in the Sefer Kedushas HaShabbos as being even more lenient. That really we only, you know, we're choshish for the Chazanish, mishim kvodo shel Chazanish. It's meikar din, we don't pass in like the Chazanish, but it's kvodo shel Chazanish to not violate his word. So I wrote a letter of Nemtzal. I asked, so is it daraisa, darabani? He goes, yeah, when you're choshish for him, it's daraisa. And then in situations where you're not choshish for him, so then it's nothing. So, so practically speaking, you can learn the Shmir Shabbos Hilchasa like that also. That in a normal situation, we'll be choshish for the chazanish. If it's a not normal situation, then there's room for, if there's already room for leniency, so we forget about the kvodush and the chazanish. But it will have the same practical effect.
What about the other poskim like
Rav Moshe? Rav Moshe, we don't have time to go into this so much. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about microphones, using microphones on Shabbos, where he sort of adopts the Chazon Ish's approach. On the very same page of Igros Moshe, they're printed, you know, on two sides. If you print it, I think it's in here. I think I put it in here, and I photocopied it in a way that maybe I didn't. Oh, no, yeah, it's in here. See, I photocopied it in a way that you could see it all on the same page. So he takes sort of, he doesn't quote the Chazon Ish, he takes that approach. When it comes to wearing a hearing aid on Shabbos, he says, well, you know, it's the Chiddush that I said, and I'm not going to impose my Chiddushim on anybody else. So it's very hard to gauge what exactly he held about electricity. Okay, so that's the first half of this section. The second half is electric lighting. Okay? There's different types of electric lighting. There are incandescent bulbs, which is the standard light bulb. I assume everyone knows what that looks like. There's a halogen light bulb. There are LED lights, which are tiny little lights that you find on a lot of different devices. Like, this is an LED light over here, this red light. And then you have fluorescent lights. Okay? So incandescent and halogen are basically the same type of light. They both use heat. Basically, you're seeing a glowing hot fire. Incandescents are 2500 Fahrenheit, and halogens are 4500 Fahrenheit. That's why the halogens are more dangerous. So those are real glowing hot fires. We'll see halakhically whether that's how much that's so. On the flip side, an LED light is basically just gas that glows. It's in a little diode. LED stands for light emitting diode, and it's just a glowing gas. There's no heat at all. They're pretty easily, you know, it's pretty easy to figure out which type of light you're dealing with in terms of those two. But I did see there are flashlights that use actual incandescent bulbs that are very, very small. I've only seen this recently. But they have a mirror around them to reflect the light. As opposed to LED lights, they're weaker, they're not as strong. If you look, you know, like on all the street lights now, they switch to LEDs because, you know, they'll last for 11 years until they have to change it, as opposed to the old lights. You have to close the whole street, unscrew the bulbs, and put in new ones. These are much more energy efficient and they're supposed to last for a really long time. Yeah.
Yeah. What definition of fire?
Okay, we didn't talk about the halakhic, but basically, you know, if in layman's terms, an incandescent bulb is just a fire. That it's heat energy as opposed to light energy. We'll talk about halakhically what that means, but it's just a glowing hot piece of metal.
Both halogens and incandescents are glowing piece of
metal. Metal and halogen?
Yeah, halogen is the type of gas that they use so that they can get the metal up to 4,500 degrees, as opposed to incandescents use a different type of gas. I don't remember the guests, argon. Okay, and then there's fluorescence, and fluorescence have their own little quirk. So fluorescence basically are similar to LEDs in that there's no heat being produced in order to have the light, but in order to get the fluorescence, you need something to start it. So you can either use electricity, a high voltage of electricity, or you can use heat to get what's called to fill that electron gap between the starter and the actual bulb. So the old fluorescent bulbs use what's called the preheat system. The bulb is heated up, the starter is heated up in advance and has a noticeable flicker, like it goes on and off 5 or 6 times before it actually brightens. The newer systems have either rapid start or instant start. So rapid start uses heat, and the heat actually stays on the whole time, and instant start uses electricity. And then there's what's called CFLs, compact fluorescents, which are the bulbs, you know, the twisty bulbs that you can screw in. I tried to get one today, I couldn't get my hands on one. But they're basically fluorescent bulbs that you can screw into a regular light socket. So those, I don't know how reliable this is, but I found someone on the internet who told me that all of them are instant start except for Philips brand. I don't know how reliable that is, but the guy seemed to know a lot more than I did about these things. So I, you know. Right. No, I don't think he's lying. I just, you know, if he doesn't know, he doesn't know.
So the rapid heat and the static heat would involve a similar type of light, the incandescent.
Right, right. That's the point. So preheat and rapid start will use heat as opposed to instant start, which doesn't. So what's the problem if there's heat? Is that Havara? Is it not Havara? So the Gemara in Yuma on the Aflama Dal, it says that they used to heat up metal rods for the Kohen Gadol to be tovel in on Yom Kippur. They used to heat them up before Yom Kippur, and they would throw them into the water on Yom Kippur. Now, obviously, somebody asked me, well, how could you do that? It's bishul. Obviously, if you heat up a rod before Yom Kippur, it's not going to be that hot by the time the next day rolls along. But I can't imagine it warmed up the water that much, but it warmed it up enough so that it was just, you know, it helped a little bit. So the assumption is that if it was Durabonon to heat up metal, you would be allowed to heat it up on Yom Kippur itself. You'd get a much nicer, it would be a little bit warmer for him. Because there's Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash. So the fact that they had to heat it up before Yom Kippur shows you that that it's probably d'oraisa to heat up a metal till it's glowing hot. The Gemara in Shabbos also talks about a gafela shel matefes, which is a metal coal. That a gafela shel matefes that's in Rishus HaRabim, you're allowed to extinguish. Whereas a gafela shel eitz, a wooden one, you're not allowed to. So what's the reason? So Rabbeinu Chananel says that a gafela shel eitz is less dangerous than a gafela shel matefes. And so a gafela shel matefes is dangerous, and for public danger, you're allowed to put out a fire. You're allowed to violate Shabbos for public danger. That's not necessarily the accepted opinion, unless it's sakonas nefashos, not just hezek harabim, but actually sakana for the rabbin. Then you can violate Shabbos. But just to prevent hezek, the most we show on hold, that's not the case. So Rashi and the Rambam seem to split off between havara as opposed to kibur. And that Gemara is even within Rabbi Yehuda's Shita that Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is Chayev. So it's not because of Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa, but because they basically are of the opinion that kindling or heating up metal to the point that it's glowing hot is Havara, whereas putting it out is only is not Kibui Midarais, it's Kibui Midrabanon. To extinguish a flame of a glowing hot piece of metal. Flame is not the best term, but to put out a glowing hot piece of metal is only midrabanan.
Why could it be because if you put out a wood fire, you'd lose the ashes? That was the whole point of the
No, but this is even within Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds halacha shenis rishus like Luchos Chayim. And then the Avnei Nezer, he quotes the Rambam and Rashi. The Rambam is a little bit different than Rashi. The Rambam holds that it's a tolda as opposed to an av. And then he quotes the opinion of the Tosus Rid that the whole thing, everything is drabanan. You light, if you bring metal to the point that it's glowing hot, it's drabanan in Havara, and it's a drabanan kibui, and that would be a different explanation of the Gemara. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman and others, everyone notes that turning on an incandescent bulb would be Havara Daraisa, unless you hold like the Rid, which is a minority opinion. And Reb Chaim Ozer was so strong about this that he used to make Havdalah on incandescent bulbs, even though there are such shilas with that, just to show that it's a real Eish. And if we assume that, then Havara would be Daraisa, meaning turning on a light, an incandescent bulb would be Daraisa, whereas turning it off would be Drabanan. Not the Drabanan of electricity, but an additional Drabanan of Kibu Yava Gachel Shamatechet.
Bishul is Havara.
Havara, yeah. Bishul might also be an issue. Meaning the Rambam says that if you heat up metal, it's not only Bishul, it's Havara also. Yeah, there's two different Rambams. The Ravid holds it's strictly Bishul. Whereas the Rambam, or at least the Ravid, whatever. We don't have to get into that now.
It's a Melacha Daraisa.
Yeah. It's Melacha Daraisa of Havara, and it might also, it's also Bishul. But Bishul, even the Chazon Ish was not as nervous about because it's a psik reishis lo nichle. What do you need a cook light bulb for?
The point is that
Havara, you want the light.
Havara, there would be no chatzi shira, and so once the wind reaches that point, it's Havara. In English, net, it's not Havara.
Right. Okay, now, another factor to consider in turning off light bulbs is Rav Moshe has a chiddush about turning off the gas on Yantif. For better or for worse, he holds that if you turn off the gas, basically all you're doing is you're pulling out the rest of the system, and the rest of the gas that's in the system is going to burn up. That's not kibui. If you assume that, the electricity, turning off the electricity, you could say the same thing. You turn it off, and then whatever electrons are have enough koach to get through the light bulb will get through, and then light bulb will shut off by itself. It's not going to have much of a practical significance if you hold that kibui of a gachel shamatachas is drabanan anyway, so the iser of electricity itself is drabanan.
Does it really work like that? When you turn off the rift, just keep going through, don't they all just stop that instant?
Okay, but whatever koach is, Rosh Shlomo Zalman discusses this, and it's more important that if you read the arguments from Oreish that Shlomo Zalman has about this svara, he seems to exclude. He seems to be arguing on Rav Moshe about the gas. That you view everything that's in the system as part of the system, and you can't take away the electricity from it. Okay. Now let's talk about grama, or defining what is grama, what's not grama. We have. Try to do grama and psik reishis still. Okay. So we know, there's one case in Shabbos that we know is grama. There's a fire that's spreading, and you don't want it to spread past a certain point, so you put jugs of water around the perimeter so that when the jugs of water get, when the fire gets to the jugs of water, the fire will go out. Okay? The question that the Rav asked, and others ask this as well, is what happened to Isho Mishum Chitza? So the Gemara of Baba Kama quotes Machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish about Eish, when the Torah says Kiseisei Eish U'matza Kotzim, that you're chayav, you're responsible for your own fire. Well, in what where do we categorize that? So Rabbi Yochanan considered that as personal action. You light a fire and it spreads, that's your problem. Whereas Reish Lakish, meaning your problem, it's as if you're going around and lighting all the places that catch fire through that fire that you lit in your own property. Whereas Reish Lakish considers it like mamono. It's as if like you let an animal loose and he starts damaging things. That's not your personal action. It's there's monetary consequence for it, but it's not your own personal action. So why is this case where you put something in the path of the fire, why don't you say it? Also, you're harnessing the same way, let's say, like, you light a fire here and it spreads. So what you're doing is you're harnessing the wind to burn all the other fields around. So here, too, you put the jug in the path of the fire, and you're harnessing whatever's spreading the fire to spread it to those jugs to put out the fire. To compound that question, the Gemara says that if you, in Tosis and Avodah Zarah from the Sefus is in the source sheet, that if you put Kamasa Shel Chaveiro Bifnei Hadaleika, you take a stalk of wheat and you put it in the path of the fire, so you have to pay for it. Okay, ostensibly that's Isho Mishim Chitza, that if you put something in the path of a fire, it's considered Isho Mishim Chitza. So here also, I put something in the path of the fire, it should be Isho Mishim Chitza. So Rav Shlomo Zalman and Maor Yesh present four answers to this apparent problem. The first, he says, the Ramban, I don't think, addresses it directly, but the Ramban says that the case of the jugs, we're putting the jugs in the path of the fire, that's only because you don't really know what's going to happen. You'll leave the jugs there. If they get to the fire, if the jugs themselves can actually hold up the heat without having to break the jugs and put out the fire, so fine. If they do happen to burn the jugs and pop them open and the water comes out, so that's a suffix. You don't know what's going to happen. It might happen, it might not. The second answer is the Shilta Giborim, and I don't think the Shilta Giborim is addressing this particular problem either, but the Shilta Giborim says that the case is only when you have kavana to do kibui, then it's a problem. Here you don't have kavana to put out the fire. You know, if the fire wants to just stop and stand in its tracks, you'd be okay with that too. If the fire doesn't spread, that's fine, as long as it doesn't burn your property. Only when you have intent to put out the fire is when it's a problem. So both of these suggestions will give us a very limited approach to Grumma. But if you look in Shulchan Aruch in Shin Lamed Aleph, Shin Lamed Aleph Sif Taf Beis, he seems the Ramban he takes out explicitly. He says even if it's Vada Yisbaku. And it doesn't sound like Kavana is a factor either in Shulchan Aruch. So the next two answers are what's more important. The next answer that Rav Shlomo Zalman quotes is more quoted here in the name of the Rav. And that's that there's a difference between whether the Koach Acher starts to work right away or whether it works L'Acher Zman. So if I light a fire in my field and the wind starts blowing it right away, that's considered Isho Mishim Chitza. If the wind comes at a later point in time, that's considered Grumma, indirect action. If I place something in the path of the fire, so that's Grumma. That's not Isho Mishim Chitza, because the fire is not the wind and the fire are not taking effect on my jug of water until a later point in time. Okay, what are you going to do about the case of the wheat? That's what bothered me for a while. So you have to go back to the Tosus, where Tosus, at the end, in the second answer in Tosus, in Avodah Zarah, in Ayin Zayed, says that maybe the case of the wheat is a case where it's not, you don't have to pay for the wheat because of Isho Mishim Chitza. It's because Rav Yochanan holds that Isho is not only Mishim Chitza, but it's also Mishim Mamono. So the case of putting the wheat in the path of the fire, you're not chayav mishum chitza, but you're chayav mishum mamono. So that's not a case of isha mishum chitza. If you put something in the path of the fire, that's not isha mishum chitza. And the explanation is that it doesn't take effect right away. The problem that you have to deal with in Tosfos is why should that be considered mamono if you don't own any of the things that are involved? But so be it. So that's the third answer. The fourth answer that Rosh Hashanah presents is there's a difference between Shabbos and other areas of Halacha. He doesn't quote the Maram Shik, but the Maram Shik had some sort of Shabbos clock. I don't know exactly what it was. but there was some sort of Shabbos talk that he had. It was mechanical. And he quotes this Tosfos Avodah Zarah, and he wants to suggest that the second opinion in Tosfos is that Isha Mishim Chisav only applies to Nezikin and not other areas of Halacha. That's not so clear from Tosfos. That notwithstanding, Rosh Shlomo Zalman says that Shabbos is certainly different than other areas of Halacha. There's a drush in the Gemara, Asiyahu Da'asar HaGrama Sharis. So the Gemara specifically singles out Grama as being unique to Shabbos, so that's Rosh Shlomo Zalman's approach. That's the approach he likes the most. So where does this come up? It comes up in terms of placing a pin into a timer. So that, let's say you have a Shabbos clock, a timer that's attached to a device that's not currently on, and there's no pins in there, so it's never going to go on. It's going to, you know, I don't have a Shabbos clock with me, but basically what the pin does is when it passes a certain point, it just flips the switch. So you have like a clock, and you can imagine, you can set it up like this also. You put a clock on the minute hand, and you put the switch somewhere along the clock, and when the clock gets to that place, it'll trip the switch. Okay? So can you put in a pin, like let's say now at 2 o'clock, so that something will go on at 3 o'clock? So the first two approaches that Rosh Shlomo Zalman presents, for sure not. The only heter is when there's a suffix, if it's going to happen or not, or when there's no kavana. And neither of those apply to Shabbos talk, although Shabbos talks are not that reliable, but certainly your intention is that it will trip the switch, so that wouldn't work. But what about the third and fourth opinion? So the third opinion will say, look, you put the pin in the clock, the clock is moving. As slow as it's moving, you know, your watch also moves, but you can never see it move. It's moving very slowly. So the clock's moving around, so you put something in, your action takes effect right away. And as once you put it in, the pin is starting to move towards the switch. So, according to that third approach, from Schefter's approach from the Rav and Rosh Shlomo Zalman's uncle, Rav Nachum Parush, so that would be Isha Mishim Chitzav, that would be a direct action, and that would be Chayev, if assuming that the end result is a light bulb or something like that. Yes?
Who's to say that the clock is halachically moving? In Atar Gizmol Al Kasha, right? So you're allowed to trap an animal when it's too slow to get away from you.
Right, but here you can actually see, I mean, you can't see it moving at any specific instant, but when you put it on, you know that it's on the path, that it's taking effect right away to...
I don't know what a clock is, but I'm looking at something, it's not moving.
Okay. How does the pin get from point A to point B?
I don't know.
It's
not moving.
I don't know. And then Rosh Shlomo Zalman's approach is that would be now he prefers this last approach that this type of action would be okay on Shabbos. So in Shmir Shabbos Kehilchoso it actually says that you're allowed to put a pin into a timer b'makom hefsed gadol, and he's also matir on Yontif, and I was told that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky didn't want to give a haskama to the sefer because of his psak. As many poskim disagree. It's even though the Shmir Shabbos Hilchos himself says that it's okay, only with Makom Hesed Gadol, but yeah.
So this Rav Shlomo Zalman, he doesn't limit Grama from the sugya in Bava Kama, but that also doesn't help us define the Gedarta of Grama as opposed to direct action. You still need to explain all the differences.
Alright, so then once you say that, then anything which has some sort of time delay is going to be...
Time delay is that clear?
Well, why would you consider it direct action? I put in the pin, and
well,
then it turns on 25 minutes later.
I mean, what kind of it discusses is turning a switch on.
Right, but when you hit flip the switch, it goes on right away.
So what was this have? Like, I mean, you have that parameter of this discussion. Is it going to be talking to people like... Well, what does it immediately mean? I mean, if you have a wire that's 10 meters long, it's going to be grama. But if it's 1 meter long, it's going to be not.
Oh yeah, I'll say it like this: what emerges from the Tosfos is that the only way that anything of this nature could be considered a direct action is because of the principle of Isha Mishim Chitza. If the principle of Isha Mishim Chitza doesn't apply, then it's grum.
So what is a direct action?
Look, Reish Lakish holds that if you light a fire and it spreads, so in terms of your personal action, it's considered grumma. The only reason why you're chayiv is mishum mamona.
The fact is, even one end of the stalk of wheat, you spread at one end, that's going to be chayiv on the other end, and you're chayiv on the exact part that you lit. I mean, there's got to be some limit here.
According to Rabbi Yochanan, if you light one end of the wheat, the whole thing will be your responsibility. Whereas Reish Lakish will say that if you light one end of the wheat, so that first thing that you light will be your personal action, and then the rest is chayiv mishum mamona.
Okay, but so
vis-a-vis your personal action would be considered grumma, right?
So I could probably
but we know that if you're lacking the Isha Mishim Chitza principle in this situation, then it would be grumma. And so if Isha Mishim Chitza doesn't apply on Shabbos, then it's grumma. Yeah.
Sorry, can you say this last part again? The one that ends up being a matter?
So he basically says that Isha Mishim Chitza doesn't apply on Shabbos. It only applies to other areas of halacha.
Why?
Because there's the Gzeiros HaKatuv of Asiya Huda'atza. Torah says, Lo Sasa Chal Malacha, Asiya is Asr, but Grama is Mutter.
All I have to do is set up two switches. I flick one switch, and then that switch flicks another switch. And then,
So we're not totally out of the woods yet, because who says Grama is Mutter? So the Gemara sounds like it's Mutter from that Asiya Huda Asr Ha Grama Shari, but that might only be on the level of Daraita. So this seems to be a machlokas Rishonim. The Ramah quotes from the Mordechai that gram kibui, or any grama, is only mutter b'makom tzeda. It's not mutter, it's usher basically means rabbanon, and chachamim allowed it in certain situations.
How can we even consider that it's hagama if it's a safek, it's part of Hagramah? Because if you switch, you change the pin to the switch, you know there's no safek, and then she's going to do it.
Right. If you assume that that's the real, that's the resolution of the discrepancy in the two Gemaras, then you're stuck. I'm talking about the other answers, yeah. So the Ramah answers it on Shabbos, the Mishnah Berurah in the Sharat Tziyun, in Hilchos Yontif, Tav Kuf Yadalet, Sifkat Lamed Aleph, says that at least on Yontif it should be Mutter. That could be why you find in the Shmir Shabbos Hilchos that on Shabbos it's Mutter only if Makom Hefsid Gadol. He's getting Hefsid Gadol because, again, Poskim argue on him. He didn't want to take such a strong stance on it. And on Yontif he allows it. I could come up with a different reason why he has those Psukim, because he holds that electricity itself is not daraisa, so really only on Shabbos you have to worry about some daraisa, but on Yontif, he holds hamsos eish is only mizrabanan, so he could be less worried about it. But, you know, it would fit in anyway with the psak of the Ramah and the Mishnah Berurah in terms of when grom is mutter, when grom is usher. Now, what about, let's say you're not tampering with the timer itself, you're tampering with the something on the receiving end. So let's say you have a light bulb that's attached to a Shabbos clock, and everything is set to go on, just that a kid comes along and presses the off button on the light bulb, on the lamp. So let's say I want to turn it on an hour before the timer is going to turn on the electricity on that circuit. So that is going back to the terminology that Tosis uses, Makarev Ha'esh Eitzel Adavar versus Makarev Adavar Eitzel Eish, moving the fire closer to the object and moving the object closer to the fire. So this third approach that you're going to split off between something that takes effect right away and something that doesn't take effect right away is clearly assuming that if you move something in the path of the fire, Makarev Adavar Eitzel Ha'esh, That's considered grama as opposed to real malacha. Otherwise, there's no other way to give that approach, because you're allowed to put jugs in the path of the fire. So if you do assume that, then you can argue at least that flipping the switch on that end of it is grama as opposed to isha misha mechitza. Okay, so a few examples. A dishwasher. So a dishwasher has a safety device that it will never go on unless the door is closed, for obvious reasons. A dishwasher, aside from the issue of electricity, is also going to cook the water. Most dishwashers now have a heating element, so we'll cook the water and it'll be havara. So is it grama? Let's say the timer on the dishwasher is not in the actual dishwasher, it's somewhere else. So the dishwasher is not on yet, and you want to close the door before it goes on so that it will go on properly. So if you assume that this is Makariv Adavar Eitzel Eish, as opposed to Makariv Eish Eitzel Adavar, which again is a judgment call, but there is room to at least say that, so then the dishwasher will be grama, which again is not necessarily mutter in total. It'd still be grama, but it would not be a malacha deraisa, as opposed to if we consider it makariv eish eitzel adavar, it would be malacha deraisa. Okay. Similarly, you can have the same type of shiloh with an air conditioner. You know, it's about to go on, but you realize it's on 2 and it's pretty warm outside. Now you want to move it all the way up to whatever, to 8 or 9, so that it cools off the room properly. So that would be the same type of question.
We didn't discuss the digital devices as well.
Digital devices, there's nothing to talk about, because every time you hit the button, so you're completing another circuit. So anytime you have thermostats or anything like that with a digital device, so it's not going to help anything when it's off. And if it's on, so you're just completing a circuit every time you hit the button.
This is similar to when you have electric elements, the old ones which work on resistors, and you have the new ones which work by lighting different parts of it, so it's the same.
What do you mean?
Changing the resistor on electric elements on Yom Tov.
Yeah. So if there's a new one for each, if there's a new, let's say you have a range, so it has like 5 different circles, and some of them, when you turn it up, it will turn on 3 instead of 2. Some of them, it will just change the resistance. So that gets into the resistance. There are a bunch of questions involved in that. The resistance question and changing resistance. I guess before it's on, then you have to talk about whether it's grum or not. Yeah.
We're really concerned about the circuit issue.
What do you mean, really?
Well, if we are, we shouldn't use things. If the mechanical circuit...
The chazan is not the
circuit. No, but we said that the electric car is what's built. Is what's part of it, right?
And the water is different.
Yeah.
Okay, you'll have to... Look, you know, everyone, it's been accepted in Kali Yisrael that we do not complete the open circuits on Shabbos. The question is why. So at least if you're not convinced, at least you know you say it's not going to be drabanon as opposed to daraisa.
Can I ask a question?
So I don't have time to talk about a few things, but just quick pointers. Setting a timer before Shabbos in itself is a question. So you could read the. There's a whole correspondence back and forth between Rabbi Sheft and Rabbi Belsky about this in the Daf HaKashrus, and he has the sources in there, you can look it up. In terms of pulling out a pin, to maintain the status quo of a device. So if you pull out a pin, let's say you're going to leave the light on for longer, so you're not really doing anything, meaning when the clock gets to that point where it was about to hit the switch, now the pin's not there anymore. So to keep the light on, almost everyone assumes it's okay, except for Binyamin Zilber, who says that maybe that's nosein shemen b'ner, which the Gemara says is chayav. If you add oil to a fire, so here you're prolonging the duration of the light, so maybe that's nosein shemen b'ner. Most poskim say that's only if you do something to the actual fire, like you add fuel to the lamp, that's no concern veneer. Here you're just preventing something from turning the device off, that's nothing. And even he agrees that if the light's off and you don't want it to go on, you can pull out the pin. Nothing's going to happen. Okay, thermostats will work basically under a similar principle. If the thermostat is the old thermostat, the mercury thermostat, where when it's on, you can keep it on for longer. When it's off, you can keep it off for longer. Yeah?
What about the issue of muksa?
So muksa, Rosh Hamazon basically presents the following. That when it comes to muksa, so if you'll tell me that half the time you're allowed to pull out the pins, I mean, that's half the, when you normally set a timer, you put the pins in and you take it out. The half the time that you're using it normally, you're not being over any iser. You know, you're not doing anything that's malacha. So how could you call that a kli shel malacha l'iser? And then he says, even if you call it a kli shel malacha l'iser, so it's mutar l'tzorech gufo mekomo. Rav Moshe, when dealing with timers, seems to say that the pins are muksa. So why is it not tzorech gufo mekomo? Because you don't really need the pin. You need the pin out. That there is a machlokus about that in Hilchos Muksa. If you don't, let's say you leave a screwdriver on your shelf, you don't want it there, but not that you want it or anything. You just if you need that space, but here you don't really need the space for the thing. You just don't want it to be there. I don't know. You have to come up with some svara why it's not a klisha malachal iser or why it's not considered tzarek gufo mekomo. But he says that's why you can't pull out the pin, because of muksa. There's a technical problem to take out a pin and move it to a later time, in that what Shlomo Zalman presents a suffix about this, because we say that there's some sort of freeze frame. When you pull it out, so now there's no pins in the timer, you put it back in at a later time, so now you just put it in mecharosh. So he gives an etza to put a second pin in behind it and then pull out the first one. So think about that. It's also an issue of Hashmas Kol, which we don't have time to discuss. Let's talk about Psik Reishi for a few minutes. Let's talk about Psik Reishi for a few minutes, because this is important. So there's Machlokas in Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about Davar Sheinu Miskaven, something which is not intended. So Rav Shimon holds it's mutter, Rav Yehuda holds it's usher. But Rav Shimon is moda when it's a psik reishe, when it's inevitable that it's going to happen, so that's called a psik reishe, and that's not only is it usher, but it's chayev, at least in certain situations. So it'll be an iser d'oraisa. Tosos quotes machloket between the Aruch and pretty much everybody else regarding what's called psik reishe of the lo nichale, is that the result, you do one action A, and the result is B. So if you benefit from that secondary result, everyone will agree that that's a problem and it's an iser d'oraisa. If you don't benefit from that result, so that's a machlokes between Tosfos and the Aruch. Tosfos holds that it's usser midrabbanan no. And the Aruch holds that it's totally mutter. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Aruch's opinion and says, and everybody argues on it, but at least it's on the page. He made the page, at least in that everybody rejected it, whereas it wasn't totally ignored in Shulchan Aruch. Rav Chaim has a piece in Hilchos Shkagos where he wants to show that the Rambam holds like the Aruch. And there was an article in Apartes in the 30s, I think it was, where Moshe Soloveitchik wrote a letter to Simcha Zelig, who was a dying in Brisk, about refrigerators, some sort of psik reishe lo nichale shaila. So Simcha Zelig, who was one of the big mekilim in Europe, wrote back, you know, I heard from your father that the Rambam also holds that the Rambam also holds like the Aruch, and Meikar Adin we hold like the Aruch and the Rambam. And the second part I think was the Simcha Zelig thing. Once the Rambam also holds that way, so maybe everybody can hold it. Psik reishe lo nichale is mutter. That's generally not the accepted opinion, but the Shmir Shabbos Hilchos does quote it in a footnote. at least that there's always that to rely on. There are situations where you really almost have nothing else to go with. So that's all if the end result, if B is deoraisa. What if the result is drabanan? Let's say you do something, let's say getting back, you open up the refrigerator and the fan turns on, even though normally it turns off. So let's just talk about it. The fan turns on, okay? And let's assume that a fan is drabanan for whatever reason. That's what's called a psik ratio, where the result is drabanan. The trumas hadeshen is makel. Trumas hadeshen is makel. The magen avraham is machmir. The mechaber is. It's not really so clear. The magen avraham disagrees. I mean, there could be other ways to explain why it's mutter to pull out that knife. I don't want to get into it now. But at least regarding that yesod, so you have that machlokes. And here also, Rav Yitzchak Chanan in Ber Yitzchak Siman Tetzvav says that we hold Me'ikra din like the Trumas HaDeshen, that when the result is Rabban and it's mutter. So there is room to combine the two kulas and say that if it's a psik reishe and it's lo nichalei and the result is drabanan, that there's room to be makel. And that's already evident in Tosus on Kuf Gimel Amar Aleph, where they themselves say that a psik reishe is lo nichalei and a drabanan is mutter. Ovad Yosef takes that approach. Rabbi Willig, also in a previous contemporary halacha, says not exactly that approach, but at least if the drabanan is the type that's not a drabanan because of malachas mashevis, but it's a drabanan because of some other reason, then you could be makelam psik reisha lonichle on drabanan. Mishnah Brura talks about the requirement for a double drabanan, and you have a machlokes between Rabbi Willig and the Shmir Shabbos Hilchasa whether that's double drabanan lonichle or even denichle. So that's how it.
What was the nekuda of Rabbi Willig?
He says one drabanan, as long as the drabanan is not the type of drabanan that's because of malachas machshavas. Like if the drabanan would be malachas shein tzricha legufa, or shnayim shasu'a, one of those.
Well, like that,
right, as opposed to electricity, which he assumes to be the drabanan of, which we're more interested in, which would be okay.
He says electricity is not malachas machshavas.
Electricity is what?
Is drabanan?
It's right, not because of malachas machshavas, but it's a lower level drabanan. Then you have this issue of suffek psik reisha, l'shavar, which means, let's say I left the light on in the fridge, right? And the fridge has an incandescent bulb in it. When I open up the fridge, the light's going to go on. That's psik reisha d'nichalei. Let's say I'm not sure whether I unscrewed the light before Shabbos. So if I did, nothing's going to happen. If I didn't, it's for sure going to go on. So can we equate that to a regular Davar Shein Miskavim? So the Taz says, yeah, that's like Davar Shein Miskavim. It doesn't matter whether you don't know what's going to happen, like the case of dragging a bench across the grass, or if you don't know what did happen in the past, and you don't know what the result is going to be. That's all called Davar Shein Miskavim. Whereas Rabbi Akiva Eiger in Yaradeya proves from the Ramah over there that that's not necessarily the case. But I'm not talking about heating up, let's say, you're at a hotel, and it's your responsibility to stoke the coals in the fireplace to heat up, you know, the room. But there are pots of food on there. So the Ramah says that you should be careful that one of those pots of food might have basar v'chalav in it from a non-Jewish guest. So by stoking the coals, you'll be cooking the basar v'chalav, which is an iser d'oraisa. So Rav Akiva Eiger points out that you see that the Ramah doesn't hold like the Taz, and here you have a suffek psik reisha. You have no idea what's in those pots. If there's basar v'chalav in the pots, you're definitely cooking them, but you don't know what's in them. And nevertheless, the Ramah is machmir. So there's a long bir halacha about this, where he tries to bring proofs from the Rishonim, who holds what. He concludes that if the result is drabanan, then you can be makel. If the result is deraisa, you should be machmir. The Malamed Lahoil, which is on the last page here, gives you a different approach to this. He says that Shabbos is different than Shari Sura. This is not necessarily going to work in the Acharonim. We discussed this. They don't seem to distinguish between Shabbos and Shari Sura. But at least on Shabbos, Malachas Mavshevis Asur Torah. So you really have to know what's going to happen. And if you don't know what's going to happen, it's a Devar Sheinu Mitzkaven. Whether you don't know what did happen, or whether you don't know what's going to happen. Whereas Basur B'Cholav or Shari Surim, then you do have to be concerned. So this is nogea to a lot of things. And even if you have what's called a Safek Machamas Tisar and Yedir, you don't know what's going to happen because, you know, you're not a bucky in the way these devices work. So if you take the Malam of the Hall's approach, so what's the difference? Why you don't know? Normally a Safek Machamas Tisar and Yedir is not a Safek. You don't know, go ask somebody else and he knows. But here, it's totally a Malachas Mashevis. It's the intent of the individual. So you can argue that even in a case of Safek Machmas Tisar Nidia, which a lot of times is the case, you don't know what's going to happen when you open up the oven. If you had the GE guy there right next to you, he'll tell you exactly what's going to happen. Other considerations in the whole Pesik Reisha discussion is there's a Rashba, which gives you... The Ran doesn't even know what to do with this Rashba. The Rashba talks about a case based on the Rishama. He understands Rishama like this, that there's a deer inside the house, right? You close the door. So if you close the door to catch the deer, so that's the Seda. What if you close the door because, you know, it's windy or whatever, you close the door for some other reason. That's not your primary intention. So the Rashba says, as long as your primary intention is not to catch the deer, that's Mutter. So the Ran jumps on the Rashba, he says, what do you mean? That's the regular case of Pesik Reisha. You intended to do A, and B was the result. So the Avnei Nezer explains the following. That Tzeda is unique, at least this type of Tzeda. So he quotes the Gemara it's really a rush in Baba Kama, who says that, let's say you lock a guy in a room for a day, and now he couldn't go to work. So the Rush says, if you drag the guy into the room and then lock the door, so you actually did something to him, you put him in the room and then you locked it up, so that's a direct action, and you have to pay Shevis for that. You have to pay him workers' comp. But if he was already in the room, and you just go and lock the door, so you didn't do anything to him, you didn't touch him, so that's Grum. Okay? So the Avnei Nezer asks, well, if that's the case, so how come on Shevis, the deer's in the house, and I want to trap him, I close the door on the deer, I lock the door, so why is that considered Tzeda? It should be considered Grama. So he says, the reason is because of Malachas Mashevis. Sometimes Malachas Mashevis works L'chumra as opposed to L'kulas. In other areas of Halacha, this would be considered Grama. But here, this would be considered Tzeda because I intended to actually trap the deer. Right? Niskaima Machshavta, that's what the Gemara in Baba Kama says with regards to Zora. And Zora would be considered Grama. But Malachas Mashevis, Asur Torah, that sometimes when your intention is fulfilled, so it's not considered Grum. So comes along the Avnei Nezer and says, now that we know that, so the deer's in the room, but I don't intend to trap the deer, I'm just closing the door. So it's no longer Malachas Mashevis. It's no longer, you can't say that was my intention to trap the deer. It wasn't my intention to trap the deer. My intention was to close the door. So as long as, and the Rashba's Lashon is, as long as your primary intention, so it sounds like even if you want to trap the deer, it's okay, because that's not Malachas Tzeda. So Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, in a journal, Atera Shlomo, Chaver Zvav, he talks about video cameras, where he shows you that, and it's a complicated cheshbon, I'm not sure I have it all down, but he says that if you would walk in front of a video camera, or in front of, let's say, any of these things, that would be considered grumma. Just that if you go in front of the video camera and start waving to it, and you want to be on the camera, so then it's Malachas Mashevis, and Malachas Mashevis would turn it into a regular Maisa. But if you're walking by the video camera and you have no intention to be on the video camera, so that's considered, then it goes back to the original, there's no longer Malachas Mashevis, and then it's back to Grumma, and at least according to the Rashba, that would be okay. I mean, the Rashba is only used in, like, pressing situations. But at least the Rashba will say that the video camera might be equivalent to this.
It just says Grumma's okay. The Rashba would have, like, checked.
The Rashba says you're allowed to close the door on the, even though the deer's inside.
Maybe that only applies to Seda.
Right. So So if you take the Avinezer's explanation that the reason is because closing the door on an animal is grama intrinsically, and grama plus malachas masheves equals the malacha, and here you're lacking the malachas masheves, so all you have left is grama, so he wants to equate that. The video camera application is going one step further, and the fact that we even hold like the Rashba itself is very, very questionable. But, you know, it's used as a tzeir flahaka. Another tzeir flahaka, yeah. Okay, so you're certainly causing the circuitry to change, to react to what you just did. Why is that not...
It
bothers you, because that's what Rav Nachemi says, that's grama. Meaning, it's let's say it's a digital camera. So originally, the first image that it got was 10010, whatever.
Yeah.
Then the next image is 1100.
In a part, it's almost not sure. There's no tangible physical change.
Well, if you're watching the screen, you see a tangible physical change. There was a tree, and now there's you and the tree.
Well,
it's a Ksiva Shema Shokayama, or it's Bona.
So
there is.
You're making a change.
But this is this is a constructive change. The guy who's watching the video camera obviously wants to be on. Rabbi Blatt has something in tradition. I guess he reprinted it in volume 5. I didn't see volume 5 yet. Okay, so that's one heter that we have. This is just one of those leniencies that you'll use like in a Shas Hatzchak. Another leniency is the Shilta Giborim. The Shilta Giborim, in presenting this, he quotes the Rashba. He says, I have no idea what the Rashba is talking about. But I'm about to tell you a Chiddush, and whatever I tell you, it's included in whatever the Rashba said. So he has this idea that called the super psik ratio. That psik ratio really means that the two things are so inextricably linked that you can never do A, the actual action, without having a result B. Here, you can walk without being on a video camera all over the place. Just this particular instance, you're in front of the video camera, so that might not be a psik ratio. That's also, you know, it really, Rashi and Ksuvis talks about this, and Rashi and Zvachim, where Rashi and Ksuvis talks about to be Meitzir Besulim on Shabbos. So there were people who were able to have bia without removing the besulim. But Rashi says that since there are people that can do it like that, these people, even if they do it in a way where they know that they are going to be made to the besulim, but if they could do it in another way, it's not considered a psik ratio. So then again, you know, these things will at least serve as leniencies. And then I have a contribution, I'm not going to talk about it now yet, it's in the most recent Kol Tzvi, which is, I did the same thing that the Shilta Giborim did, just one level less, which makes it a little more palatable, but we're not going to discuss that. Practically speaking, so let's say motion sensors. So motion sensors are going to be psik reisha d'lo nichalei on a drabanan, so we don't need all the kulis that I just presented. You know, I'm talking about the ones with like the little LED light goes on. If you have a big, if the street light or something is based on your motion, you've got a problem because the lights are deraisa and they benefit you. So it's psik reisha d'nichle and deraisa. So you should really try, if you have a neighbor that does that to you and there's no way to get into your house, Rabbi Willig's etzah is to get a big spotlight, and that way you don't benefit from his light because your light is so much brighter. But that doesn't always... it's not, there are apartment buildings when you walk down the steps, the lights go on. That's, you have to work that. You're paying enough rent, work that out with the landlord.
Could you be misjudged the fact that you don't know whether the light's going to be operative on these particular things?
Yeah, that works the first time.
No, because it might have broken down.
What, that every like, million... and one thing, I'll just close with this. Video cameras. So this was a big thing. The Beis Medrash, they never had, until recently, they didn't have a video camera in the Beis Medrash. They just had one going down the whole Amsterdam Avenue. They had one on First Bowl. So Shefter used to try to get in from 187, because then you don't get on the video camera. He didn't go on to Amsterdam, unless he had to. Now there's no way to get into the Beis Medrash without being videotaped. And the videotape, I heard, they keep them like forever. They don't just re-record over them. So I came up, I don't have chalk, but I came up with, I thought of a solution to this. For better or for worse, I never presented this to them, but if somebody wants to advocate this, so here's the hallway and the video camera's here, right? So you can't go anywhere without being on the video. You can't go in this hallway, you can't go in this hallway. Let's say you put the camera here and another one over here, or let's say two, that there's no way to get into the building without being on this one or this one, and you rotated them randomly. That one time, you know, when this one's on, this one's off, and when this one's off, this one's on. So when you walk past here, it would be a suffix psychoratia, and when you walk over here, it would also be a suffix psychoratia. So it's an expensive proposition. I'm sure you could do anything, you know.
If you're
in this situation and you're setting up a system like this, that would be, if you had to have a video camera, that's the way, you know, that would probably be a better way to do it than just to have the video camera there.
Okay.
I'm saying you're going to have to throw in other coolers also.
No, I know that, but I'm saying in the current situation with one camera.
With one camera, we assume it's lo nichale, which, you know, you can argue with that also because it's there for your benefit. But on the other hand, you don't ever want to be on the camera. You're not benefiting from being on the camera. And then you're mitzvah for that. So the Aruch is Mekel, and you're mitzvah for that with the Rashba's Heter or the Shilta Giborim's Heter.
Is that
videotape something d'oraisa? So that depends what type of medium you use. If you use a tape where you can actually hold it up to the light and see the pictures, which most are not like that, you know, those are. So that would be ksiva. If not, it would be bone. Rishon Zalman says, like, if you save something onto a hard drive, that would be bone, because you just made a better disk than what it was before. It's a question whether that's a bone deraisa, bone drabonon. And if it's just on a screen, so it's ksiva sheino shakayama, which would be drabonon. Okay, we didn't cover everything, but if you have questions, I'm around. Thank you.